You're listening to Song Exploder, where musicians take apart their songs and piece by piece tell the story of how they were made. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. In May 1980, the band Joy Division was devastated by the death of lead singer Ian Curtis. The three remaining band members, Bernard Sumner, Peter Hook, and Stephen Morris, decided they would keep making music together. And a few months later, Jillian Gilbert joined them. They called the band New Order. New Order is one of the most influential bands of the last four decades. Their song Blue Monday came out in 1983, and it holds the record for being the best-selling 12-inch single of all time. Rolling Stone put Blue Monday on its list of the 500 greatest songs of all time, and Pitchfork included it in its top five best songs of the 1980s. To celebrate the 40th anniversary of the release of Blue Monday, in this episode, New Order discusses how they created the song. This episode was produced in collaboration with Transmissions, the official New Order and Joy Division podcast produced by Cup and Nuzzle. We've put together this story out of the hours of interviews they've recorded, along with a new interview I did with Peter Hook. As you'll hear the band explain, nothing about Blue Monday's success, or really even its existence, was something that they planned for.
What does the band that used to be Joy Division do now that you're no longer Joy Division?
That's drummer Stephen Morris.
Obviously, you're a bit numb, really, emotionally.
Here's bassist Peter Hook.
Rather than deal with the grief around Ian's death, we just threw ourselves into recording and writing. We just got on with it. And it was a real struggle.
It wasn't anyone's particular fault.
This is guitarist and vocalist Bernard Sumner.
It was just a difficult transitional period, but it was necessary, you know.
The three of us, we were playing together really, really well.
But the main problem was that if one of us was going to sing, we had to sing and play at the same time. Bernard and Hookie couldn't do it. So we got Jillian in playing guitar and eventually keyboards.
Here's Jillian Gilbert.
We went to New York. We played at like these really dark clubs with no air conditioning on a tiny little stage. And then we'd go out clubbing after we'd finished because the clubs were open until 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. We used to listen to Italian disco, European disco, and it just seemed a lot more fun.
Bernard, in particular, was very excited by all this.
I started hearing frequencies that I'd never heard before. A lot of sub-bass.
And his ambition really was to make disco records. So the songs that he was hearing, particularly when we were in America, were the ones that he wanted to emulate.
So when we came back, we thought, well, why can't we do a track like that? We wanted to hear our song in a sort of disco clubby environment instead of like an alternative band.
Blue Monday, from start to finish, took nearly a year. It started as an instrumental because we didn't believe in encores. We were so young and idealistic that we thought we've played our set, we've played the songs that we've worked on. Why should anybody want anything else? And then someone came up with an idea of what about if we played the synthesizers after we'd gone off?
It was a bit like an adventure because we thought, can we do it? Chain all these parts together and just have a song that just plays on its own so we could walk off stage.
And that was where the idea came from, having a keyboard that when you press the button played this instrumental for 10 minutes and then hopefully everyone would be happy and they'd stop moaning at us to do an encore.
It was quite exciting though, programming everything.
That's a Moog. This was very much Bernard's baby. He had the idea from a few disco records, and programmed it because he wanted to hear it programmed. This was in Britannia Row, which was considered to be the state-of-the-art studio in 1981 when we recorded it. In those days, the equipment was difficult, shall we say. You could never imagine how difficult it actually was then. Doing the wiring, really nuts and bolts of getting things ready.
It was a totally mad idea because we started off with huge sections and then we didn't have the technology at the time to sequence them all together.
Everything had to be programmed in one massive loop.
I saw Blue Monday more of a machine and the different rhythms within it are different gear cogs. So you've got hi-hats that are going and you've got triplets that are going. And I wanted this sharp clap sound that I'd heard on disco records from the 70s. And then you got the beat. That's the engine.
Recording that as a backing track was very, very arduous. That's me, that's the bass. It's a six-string bass guitar that I started using in Joy Division. It's actually tuned the same way as a guitar. It's an octave down from E, A, D, G, B, E. That's why a lot of early New Order, when we used to play, everybody used to think that those lines were guitar. That's my direct lift from Ennio Morricone.
Ennio Morricone was the composer for some of the most iconic spaghetti westerns, including the movie For a Few Dollars More.
Someone was playing it in the rec room, and I heard it. Down, 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 down. And I thought, I'll try that. That was the first use of the Joy Division style bass over the synthesizers.
We got an emulator, which was like the first, I'm tempted to say affordable, but it wasn't affordable. It was very expensive. It was a, you know, it was a big thing that you could record any sound into.
I think you had 2 seconds of sample. So you could record anything up to 2 seconds, and then it would loop the sample.
So we recorded farts and sneezes into it and laughed, and, oh, this is fantastic.
It was literally the first thing that we did was to sample a fart and go up and down the keyboard. But that's the sample of a voice, which we liked because it sounded like a mellotron. And that's the Prophet synthesizer.
It was a song that wasn't really a song. It was just a lot of electronic things that sounded good.
Rob Gretton, our manager, was adamant that we needed to put vocals on it. Adamant. And we fought valiantly not to do it. When we lost Ian Curtis, we lost a lot because he was so good at this and words came to him so easily and so naturally. He really was the champion of it.
The thing about it is, as a band, you've got a position and we're happy with those roles. And the one job that nobody really wanted suddenly became vacant. It takes a lot to be a singer, particularly there's a singer and then there's the front man. And Ian was kind of like that.
And then when all of a sudden us three had to do it, it was hell.
We all had goes at singing sometimes. And Bernard was quite good because you could tell he didn't want to do it, but he did it in a kind of half-hearted, disinterested way that was somehow quite charming.
How does it feel to treat me like you do when you've laid your hands upon me and told me who you are?
So Bernard ended up getting the short or longest straw and inherited the curse of the lead singer.
Thought I was mistaken. I thought I'd heard your words. Tell me, how do I feel? Tell me now, how do I feel?
The lyrics were all written together by me, Barney and Steve. It was always the last thing that we did was the vocal, and the last thing that we'd do would be the lyric. And Bernard would actually be in singing while me and Steve were still scribbling lyrics down for him to try this, try that word, try this.
And I still find it so hard to say what I need to say, but I'm quite sure that you'll tell me just how I should feel today.
And then the effect that you hear on Blue Monday is we would send it through a little bit of spring reverb and then pump the whole lot through the speaker and record it back onto the track.
And I thought I was mistaken, and I thought I'd heard you speak. Tell me, how do I feel? Tell me now, how should I feel?
Once that was done, it was more or less finished, and it was the song.
Rob, our manager, Rob Gretton, said, this is going to be a hit. And we were like, I don't think so. Because we couldn't imagine it at the time.
So we didn't recognise or think that Blue Monday was any different to any of the other songs in stature. The only thing that was different about it was the length.
We didn't want to shorten the song into 3 minutes because we had this song that we thought was just complete.
We kept it at 9 minutes and we were happy to do that. But of course, we couldn't put Blue Monday on the LP.
One thing about vinyl was that with albums, you're obviously limited to how much time that you could put on those albums. So it was usually four tracks a side.
So it suggested that it should be a standalone single.
12-inch gave you the possibility of having a higher fidelity on the record. And we really went into that in detail on Blue Monday. We went into the science of the fidelity of getting as much power and punch on 12-inch vinyl as possible. We were aware of the importance of putting a record on in a club and it sounding really punchy and louder than the other ones.
It got voted the number one song by 1,000 DJs to rescue a night. If they're having a bad night and they want it to go off, they put Blue Monday on.
I was in a club in Berlin once, not so many years ago, and they were playing a lot of techno and stuff and people were dancing, and then they put Blue Monday on and everyone got up. So I've witnessed that.
I mean, and that is such a compliment. Now you can lift the lid of a laptop and you could be in doing a track like Blue Monday within, God, 5 minutes. But the most, I suppose, unique thing about Blue Monday is the mistakes. That gave it its unique edginess. It didn't follow a normal song format. But once those are all pushed up together, they do give off a kind of magic.
And now, here's Blue Monday by New Order in its entirety. To learn more, visit songexploder.net and check out the podcast Transmissions, the definitive story of Joy Division and New Order. I'll link to it on the Song Exploder website, where you'll also find links to buy or stream Blue Monday. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. This episode of Song Exploder was made by me, Craig Ely, Kathleen Smith, and Mary Dolan. The episode artwork is by Carlos Lerma, and I made the show's theme music and logo. Special thanks to Frank Palmer and Cup and Nuzzle, and Stuart Wheely and Warner Records. Song Exploder is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. You can learn more about our shows at radiotopia.fm. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rishi Hirway, and you can follow the show at Song Exploder. You can also get a Song Exploder t-shirt at songexploder.net/shirt. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.
From PRX.
If you're looking for another podcast to listen to, check out Normal Gossip from Radiotopia. They're coming back for their sixth season. If you don't already know the show, they were named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, and their new season starts April 17th. Normal Gossip is really fun. It's a show about petty and ridiculous and strange stories and the way that we share those stories. The stories that they tell in the podcast are sent in by listeners, and then they're anonymized and then retold to a guest, and then they have to weigh in on the decisions that the people in the story are making. It's very funny and very beloved. So if you aren't already listening, check out the new season, which starts April 17th. You can listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts.